America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, where one of America's more famous and celebrated political commentators, Juan Williams, writes in the Hill magazine that the Supreme Court is on the brink of disaster. Why? Well, because they have only literally a few weeks left, and it's an off chance to correct some of the more extreme elements that are maybe pending as a result of the opinion that was leaked, the opinion that was signed by Justice Alito and was apparently supported by four other members of the court. Now, nobody knows where John Roberts was planning to vote, but what does it matter if it's 5-4? Well, it matters if there is another justice who changes, basically, and requires a rewrite, a redo of that unofficial linked opinion. Juan Williams is a Fox News analyst. He is a columnist for The Hill, a former Washington Post scribe and author of several best-selling books. He's a friend of this show. And Juan, a pleasure to have you back. So you're talking about, in your piece, which I found very, very encouraging, a possible outcome that isn't quite as polarizing or apocalyptic in the view of pro-choice advocates as the decision that was leaked in the name of Justice Alito.
That's right. I mean, I think that what you're hearing now from inside the court is that there still is a hot political moment of negotiation and the possibility that you're referring to, which would be something like a compromise so that you wouldn't have a total end to constitutional protection nationwide for abortion rights. Instead, it would be something along the lines of the case coming from Mississippi that requires a limit of 15 weeks on any attempt at an abortion.
Right, which does seem to be in line with the actual decision in Roe v. Wade, if you go back and read it. And also, particularly with the concurring opinion that was given on Roe v. Wade by the Chief Justice at the time, Warren Burger. In other words, they set up a framework in Roe v. Wade, very controversial at the time. The whole case has been controversial since it began. But they set up a framework where they authorize states to treat abortion very differently in the first trimester, in the second trimester, and in the third trimester. That's the kind of precedent you're saying they could use to say that the Mississippi law limiting abortion to the first 15 weeks could be approved without them striking, opening the door to something far more extreme like the Oklahoma law, which bans abortion, they say, from the time of fertilization.
Exactly right, Michael. So you have detailed it for the listeners in terms of the trimester system. The big change that's happened in the 49 years since Roe v. Wade was decided, 1973, is increased sense of when a fetus is viable. And generally now, it's taken to be in that 23-24-week period. But in the case in Mississippi, they want it down to 15, and they make exceptions, and, you know, rape, incest, that kind of thing. But 15 weeks. The court, I think, could put together a majority saying, yes, okay, 15 weeks. That's the point of what was referred to back in 1973 as quickening the viability of the fetus. But at the moment, the draft that came out, written by Justice Alito, would absolutely take apart Roe v. Wade, say that it had been improperly decided back in 73, and that there is no basis for any constitutional protection, privacy or otherwise, due process, no protection at all, because the word abortion is never put out in the Constitution, not an enumerated right, as they would say.
Right, and it's not, and they allow, and the court has allowed for unenumerated rights, rights that are not mentioned in the Constitution, but they say they are grounded in our traditions and in our mores. And that clearly wasn't the case with Roe or with a right to abortion.
Well, no, this is controversial, but the fact is that the reason that abortion was illegal and for much of the American history was because doctors didn't want competition from midwives and others in terms of providing care to pregnant women. But the situation is such that at some point you have the court, especially in this Justice Alito opinion, saying, oh, well, that means that for most of our history, nobody thought abortion should be allowed. Well, to the contrary, nobody even spoke about it. Abortion was widespread, if you look at the history, for much of our history. The question even now is not whether or not we stop abortion, because people, if it's up to every state legislature, there'll be a patchwork and people can travel and go to areas where there is legal abortion. But the question is, if you have an abortion in a state where it's illegal, well then, you know, there's going to be lots of corruption and possibly dangerous medical procedures going on. And, you know, then the question increasingly from the people on the left is, are you going to call a woman who has an abortion a murderer? So it enters into a new realm if you decide that 50 years of precedent is to be undone in one moment. And that's why I say in the Hill today that I think the court is on the verge of exacerbating existing divisions in the country, and it'll be disastrous for the country. I think you'll see an outpouring of anger, you know, and bitterness, and it'll sharpen, you know, the political divide in the country. But for the court, all of this politicking, all of this leaking, all of this not looking at the law and speaking to the law as it is, as opposed to bringing up things that happened, you know, 150 years ago, I think is just horrible. Because, you know, you got to trust the court. The court should be independent. It shouldn't be the in-power group deciding, yeah, it's our turn to decide what we want. There should be some stability that the American people can look to the court and say, the court decided this 50 years ago. I can understand that they make decisions about within that framework, given that we've seen advances in science. But to totally throw it out, I think that hurts the court's credibility. That's why I say it's a disaster for the court.
Okay, you know what the big challenge to your argument is, and I think your piece is very important. I think people should read it and take a look at it. But the challenge to your argument is that if having received enormous publicity all around the world, if they then basically tear up, having torn up Roe v. Wade, now they tear up Alito's decision and come out to a split the difference kind of decision, the kind of thing that actually could probably get a majority of the public behind it. If they do that, they'll look more political than ever. They'll be additionally disgraced for having torn up this leaked decision under political pressure.
Right. And so the question would be, was the purpose of the leak just what Michael Medved laid out for you, dear listener, which is to say to hold that block of votes in place for the existing decision? But negotiating a Supreme Court decision is not different. It happens every day.
Could you hang on for a moment, Juan, because
yes.
I think this conversation bears continuation. We'll be right back with Juan Williams on the future of the Supreme Court and abortion in America, coming up on The Medved Show.
Thanks for taking my call. You're the most brilliant radio talk host in America today.
The Michael Medved Show. Politics to pop culture and from coast to coast, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And on the Michael Medved Show, speaking with Juan Williams, his provocative piece in The Hill magazine is called The Supreme Court is on the Brink of Disaster. And one of the things that's fascinating and somewhat startling about it, Juan, is I think the general assumption has been by most observers that when they ask who is responsible for the leak, most people assume it was someone who basically was very opposed to the decision that was being reached by Justice Alito and four of his colleagues, not including the Chief Justice. But what you're suggesting is it may have been a strategy to hold those five votes together. How would that have worked?
Well, it works in this way. And let me say that, you know, obviously I'm speculating. I don't know anything for sure. But it works this way, Michael, that somebody feared that Chief Justice Roberts, who, as you, again, laid out for the audience, Chief Justice Roberts at this moment looks to be a vote with the liberals or people who are in support of abortion rights. So that would make for a 5-4 decision if the Alito decision, which totally does away with abortion as a constitutionally protected right, was to carry the day. But if Justice Kavanaugh was persuaded by Justice Roberts that it was in the best interest of the court, and this is what I was writing about today on the Hill, best interest of the court maintaining its credibility with the American people, not exacerbating a huge political divide in the country, not becoming a target of all the protest and the outcry over undoing something that has been in law for 50 years, if Kavanaugh was to go along, well, then maybe Roberts would shift his votes, and then you would have a majority for the Mississippi decision, the 15-week limit. And the key here is that, in my thinking, that the Wall Street Journal editorial page, a conservative editorial page, has been running editorials even before the leak, saying that there was infighting at the court in which people were trying to move Kavanaugh and saying that he should not move. So it would seem to indicate that even people on the right were concerned about an effort to slice off Kavanaugh's vote and create a majority simply to back the 15-week limit, not to undercut Roe v. Wade.
Now, let me understand how this works, and because it gets complicated. In other words, if you had a decision where there was a decision presumably written by the chief that basically said, okay, we are going to let the Mississippi law stand and any other ban on abortion that bans abortion limits it to the first 15 weeks, say, of pregnancy. And then after that, it is not authorized except for rape, incest, life of the mother. If he wrote a decision like that and Justice Kavanaugh concurred in that decision, then that would leave the court with a four on one side and in terms of favoring the complete overrule of Roe v. Wade, and three on a separate side, basically striking down the Mississippi law, saying that there is no right under Roe to interfere with the right to abortion at any time that would go any time during the first 12 weeks. If something like that happened, then the holding would be with the two concurrences right in the middle.
Correct, because that the precedent would hold. In other words, you don't have a vote to overturn existing law. You don't have a 5-vote majority.
Correct. Well, they're not going to get a five-vote majority to overturn the Mississippi law. That won't happen because they don't have either.
You and I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't. They only have three votes that would do that.
Right.
And what all of this goes to, I was looking at the concurring opinion, and I know that this goes back in history, but it's important history. It's the concurring opinion by Warren Burger, who was the Chief Justice. And what he says is, I do not read the court's holdings today as having the sweeping consequences attributed to them by the dissenting justices. That was Justice Rehnquist and Justice White, who voted against Roe v. Wade. He says, the dissenting views discount the reality that the vast majority of physicians observe the standards of their profession and act only on the basis of carefully deliberated medical judgments relating to life and health. Plainly, and this is, again, the Chief Justice in a concurring opinion. The Chief Justice says, plainly, the court today rejects any claim that the Constitution requires abortions on demand. Now, that would be fairly close to the kind of decision that you're suspecting Justice Roberts may be advocating for.
Yes. You know what I liked about what you said, Michael, was so many people right now are rejecting this idea of, you know, abortion on demand. You know, most Americans want the Roe v. Wade decision to just continue as precedent. They don't see any need to roll it back. But if you do away with it, most Americans are in favor of abortion rights, but it's a patchwork, and they are very, very aware that people could abuse this privilege in this country, and they want, you know, the trimester system. People like that. They say, hey, you know what? If you are about to give birth, you shouldn't be having an abortion unless it's a matter of the welfare, the health of the mother. And even in the second trimester, there is some unease with this procedure. And people see it as, some people, as the taking of a life. So you can understand that when the Chief Justice said back then, you know, it's not about abortion on demand. Doctors will have to use their ability to discern what is right and what is wrong. I think most Americans think today that women and their doctors should be the ones in position to make this decision. But what you're getting now is people who are saying, no, they think that the state legislatures should be able to say, as the voice of the locality, here is the rule with regard to abortion. Chief Justice Roberts is in line with Chief Justice, was it Rehnquist?
Burger.
Yeah. In saying, you know what, let there be some discrimination on the part of the people who are directly affected.
Well, and let there be something like a compromise, which is, of course, the American political, not necessarily judicial, decision of tradition. Juan Williams, thanks for your contribution. We will be right back.
The Michael Medved Show.
Out.
Michael Medved Show.
That is really extreme.
And on the Michael Medved Show, there's a piece in the New York Times which comes close, given how strongly the New York Times leans to the left, comes close to basically waving a white flag in the forthcoming 2022 midterm elections. The piece is basically a summary of where the Democrats are under the heading, Democrats fear red wave. Doesn't that sound scary if you're a Democrat? Will be hard to escape. And then they write, the challenges facing Democrats are cyclical and they are structural. The Democratic majorities on Capitol Hill could scarcely be narrower. The party in power must almost always loses in a president's first midterm election. Even absent the current overlapping national crises, some of which are beyond Mr. Biden's control. Gasoline prices just hit their highest level ever nationwide over the weekend. the president's approval rating in an Associated Press poll hit a new low of just 39%. The stock market has dropped for the seventh consecutive week. Today was a big day up, but that's different. Violent crime rates have spiked. A baby formula shortage has alarmed parents, and inflation remains high. The problem is not messaging. The problem is reality, said Representative Richie Torres, a Democrat of New York. Wow. Let us go to Ryan in Salt Lake City, Utah. You're on the MedVed Show.
Hi, Mike. I just wanted to address two points you discussed with your last guest. One of those was the idea that 50 years of precedent could be overturned by a single decision. And I am grateful that those types of things can happen, the obvious cases of slavery and with women's suffrage. And he also touched on the viability argument. And I don't believe viability is a good measure of whether a life has intrinsic value, one, because that is a moving target depending on technology as it advances, and two, a newborn baby left to its own devices is also not viable, but that's certainly not a justification for being able to kill it.
Well, you're entirely correct, but I'll tell you why you're correct especially is because, well, first of all, slavery was never ruled out by the Supreme Court. Slavery was validated by the Supreme Court, and basically it took an amendment to the Constitution, the 13th Amendment, which was passed in 1865 at the end of the war. That amendment ended slavery. It wasn't the Supreme Court that ever rejected it. Secondly, what you were saying about this whole idea about viability being a standard, that argues for why Justice Alito is right. Roe v. Wade was horribly decided. You go back and read the case, and it's just nuts. In other words, for the Supreme Court to say that based upon our reading of the Constitution, we believe that the ability of states to regulate abortion should be divided between the first trimester, the second trimester, and the third trimester, it's totally arbitrary, and it's not for the Supreme Court to decide. The reason I was bringing that up, and Ryan, this is because of where we are right now, is we are entering a period where the argument is going to be so complicated, and the level of rage and upset and desperation is going to be so complicated, because you'll have states, some of which protect the baby from conception. The word they use in the Oklahoma law is fertilization. To other states that protect babies only beginning in the second trimester, and other states that protect babies only in the last trimester, though the Democrats want to pass a national law that would have no protection for any baby at any stage of gestation in the womb. So the idea that this has gotten to be a court case rather than a legislative argument, I think that is the real folly behind Roe v. Wade, don't you think?
I do, and you're entirely correct, but I still see this as a step in the right direction, and I think when we look back on history, this is still going to be a pivotal moment.
It will be a pivotal moment no matter how it turns out. What I found fascinating speaking to Juan Williams was that there is quite a bit of buzz right now about the possibility that we don't know Justice Roberts' opinion. And the question of where he comes down and whether he has a concurrence, in other words, a switch. At the time that President Roosevelt was pushing for court packing in 1938, there were a couple of very controversial cases about validating aspects of the New Deal. And there were two justices, I believe they were Brandeis and maybe Cardozo, who switched. And of course, what they said, that was a switch in time that saved nine, that there was a switch which took away the political pressure for appointing new justices and basically undermining the Supreme Court and taking away any prestige, power, or viability for that institution. So that was a switch in time that saved nine. They wouldn't even need two people to switch this time. And would that be the right thing for the court? It's I think, very arguable, because what it would indicate is that the court bends too obviously and too directly to political pressure, which is why this entire leak is such an appalling lapse. It was such an appalling blow against our democracy as it's functioned for hundreds of years. Ryan, thank you for your thoughtful and very substantive phone call. There is another talk about religious liberty, and again, which is remains a very hotly contested issue on the court level and sometimes in the legislature. Whoopi Goldberg had a fairly ridiculous point to make, speaking about the Archbishop of San Francisco, who has called for Nancy Pelosi to be denied communion over her new position, and it is a new position for her, to legalize, authorize abortion up until the final moments of pregnancy. So when a child is fully developed in utero, which is not the law even now in anywhere in the country, but would be everywhere in the country if the Democrats got their way. This is what Whoopi says about the Archbishop of San Francisco. Listen, clip 19.
The abortion rights battle is starting to blur the lines between church and state. The Archbishop of San Francisco is calling for Speaker Nancy Pelosi to be denied receiving communion because of her pro-choice stance. He's one of the priests who also called for President Biden to be denied sacrament. This is not your job, dude. That is not up to you to make that decision. You know, what is the saying? It's kind of amazing. But what is the point of communion, right? It's for sinners. It's for sinners. It's the reward of saints, but the bread of sinners. How dare you? How dare you?
Okay, if it is not his job, is it anyone's job? I mean, if you're Archbishop of San Francisco, whose job is it? Is it the job of the San Francisco City Council? Who would you put in charge of the Catholic Church? This is a question of religious liberty. And I don't think they could make a case of it defending Nancy Pelosi's right to communion, interfering with the liberty of the church. We'll be right back on The Medved Show.
The Michael Medved Show.
That's really inappropriate.
Show.
You know what? This just makes me sick.
And on the Michael Medved Show, a piece, a report by Shane Goldmacher and Katie Gluck at New York Times. And boy, does this ever show a powerful summing up of, I think, the mood of the country. A brand new AP poll released over the weekend showed what percentage of the country believes that we as a nation are headed in the right direction. And I think a lot of people think about a third, just 2-1, we're in the wrong direction. It's not. The AP poll just released has 21% of Americans who believe the country's headed in the right direction. It's less than a fourth. It's just barely a fifth of America. This is like, we finally found a way to unify the country, because the country's unified that America's not headed in a good place. Yes, it seems to be pretty much everybody agrees with that. A CBS News YouGov survey on Sunday showed 65% of Americans said Mr. Biden was slow to react to important issues and events. And his approval rating among Democrats was at just 73% in the AP survey. Now, what's remarkable is in the exit polling, he won 92%. Maybe 93%, but it was up there, of Democrats. And losing 20 points in his own party, I think the pipe dream that Joe Biden is going to run for re-election with any chance at all of victory, I think is very dim. If I had to catch, if I had hair to catch fire, said James Carville, it would catch fire. Okay, Simone Sanders, who was a former top Biden aide, also was a former top Bernie Sanders aide. She's now with MSNBC. She sought to deflect blame outside the White House. Where's the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee? Where's the Democratic National Committee? Hell, the Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee, she said on a recent New York Times podcast, adding, that's what I'm saying. I don't know. I don't work there. And in an episode that exposed the depth of the alarm for Democrats, the lawmaker who oversees the House Democrat strategy and the man perhaps most responsible for recruiting reluctant candidates into tough races himself took refuge into a safer district in New York last week after a court-ordered redrawing of the state's lines, which, by the way, that court changing the lines in New York may have saved the Republicans 4 seats, which is crucial because the Democrat majority is only 5 seats. What they're talking about here is the decision by Representative Sean Patrick Maloney, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee chair, flared both ideological and racial tensions inside the caucus. The Republicans looked on with glee. Quote, the fact that you have senior members abandoning their districts to run against their own colleagues, I think that shows you how toxic this environment is for Democrats, said Representative Tom Emmer, who's chairman of the National Republican Campaign Committee. In Georgia, Kevin Pearson, a retired firefighter and Ebenezer Baptist Church congregant, that's where Senator Raphael Warnock was the former pastor, he's been volunteering with voter registration efforts and is concerned that he's seen Mr. Warnock trailing in some polls to another black candidate, Herschel Walker, former football star, a leading Republican who almost surely will win the nomination tomorrow. He urged vigilance. This is the firefighter, retired firefighter who goes to Ebenezer Baptist Church, which is where Dr. King preached too. He urged vigilance, especially for black voters. We take a step forward and then we get pushed back, he said. But if we don't step forward, we get pushed 2 steps. Look, this is all a fateful trumpet that should wake up Joe Biden. There's a terrific piece that I hope the president reads. And not for the good of the Democratic Party, because I don't particularly wish good, or but I wish success for the administration, because that's a country. A broken administration over the next 2 years, I mean, totally broken, it's well on its way. President Biden has to decide. This says Robert Zoellick, who's a former World Bank president and former U.S. Trade Representative and Deputy Secretary of State. Robert Zoellick says, President Biden has to decide, does he want to be remembered as a Jimmy Carter or Harry Truman? President Truman, Carter, and Biden all assumed office hoping to create a to reassure a traumatized nation, only to have their plans dashed by surprises. Like Truman and Mr. Carter, Mr. Biden is struggling with inflation, and all three labored to unite a fractious Democratic Party pulled left by those who denounced the traditions of the moderate middle. And what he's saying is that Truman recognized how dire the situation was and completely recalibrated. He lost after 14 years of Democratic rule. Truman lost both the House and the Senate in 1946 and yet came back and won that surprise re-election. Could Biden do the same thing if he loses both the House and the Senate? Well, he's giving no evidence of it, not right now. And in terms of basically the fact that politics looks a little bit like a cartoon, well, there's actually a character in a cartoon coming up who plays the governor of California, you know, not Gavin Newsom. It's a fictional governor. And that movie is The Bad Guys, which has been actually getting some pretty good notices and enthusiastic response. Listen.
Now it's time for MedVed's Entertainment Minute.
A criminal gang of art thieves and bank robbers takes advantage of the fact that they're all scary animals, including a wolf, a snake, a piranha, a shark, and more, reveling in their designation as the bad guys. Now available for rent on multiple streaming services.
You ever wonder what it'd be like if the world wasn't scared of us?
You villains, you need a makeover.
That's a guinea pig professor who's a famous apostle of goodness who works with the governor of California, secretly a tough gal superhero, to try to transform the bad guys into good guys despite their identification as members of unpopular species. It's amusing, handsomely animated, and endearingly silly with vocal talent including Sam Rockwell, Marc Maron, and Awkwafina. This is no classic, but certainly entertaining enough that it's likely there will be sequels, as there were with the books that inspired it. 2.5 stars for the loony but likable and PG-rated The Bad Guys. And on the Michael Medved Show, tomorrow again is primary day, as we've been saying. This could be the most significant primary so far. In fact, by far, in terms of measuring the continued appeal of President Trump as leader of the Republican Party, and somebody who wants to undo the what he considers to be the rigged, stolen election of 2020. We'll find out more about that with races coming up in tomorrow in Texas, in Arkansas, in Alabama, and most of all in Georgia. And speaking of controversial, there's a pastor who's drawn a great deal of emotional response because he just sermonized saying that Democrats are demons, and by definition, and they're not welcome in his church. Is that the right way to influence Democratic voters or to win new congregants? And Gallup has a new poll that shows that 1 in 3 Americans think the pandemic is flat out over. Okay, if that's the case, then why are cases going up? And even some indications hospitalizations may be going up and deaths. We'll talk about where we stand and where we go from here for this greatest nation on God's green earth.